This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. As the video of black body bags stacked in a New York hospital room makes the rounds, the numbers are leaping higher. 1,400 have died from the pandemic in New York, and the curve is taking its accustomed exponential shape here in Oregon and Washington. 19 are dead in Oregon, and 6 have died in Clark County. 50,000 have died around the world, and the pandemic is only now taking hold in the U.S. Social and economic degeneracy in the U.S. makes it the perfect petri dish for the disease as it romps easily through the grotesquely bloated prison system and attacks people who cannot afford to quit their jobs or even see a doctor. The pale horse and its skeleton rider grin eagerly at the millions of houseless and other defenseless children separated from their parents and shoved into ICE detention cells. America is a society custom built for the plague. The numbers glibly repeated by the corporate-owned press about the likely death toll are fairy tale nonsense. The epidemiologist's lowest expectations for the percentage of people affected by COVID-19 are 60%. Two-thirds of the world will eventually be infected by this wildly contagious pestilence. Despite the lies of the U.S. spy agencies, the significant distortion of the Chinese government was not in the number of people infected, but in the numbers of people dead from coronavirus. The number of funeral urns issued by the various mortuaries in Wuhan are easily 10 times the official deaths. So we know from that and from Italy that people have died at a far greater rate than 1%. But let's take 1% as the statistic we will project our graphs with. If 200 million out of the USA's 330 million people, therefore, are eventually infected, we can expect a death toll not of 200,000, but of 2 million. 2 million dead over the next 2 years is much closer to the known truth. 2 million dead, and quite possibly a depression worse than anything we have ever seen. Our only hopes are the production and swift free distribution of a vaccine. And for the economics, our only hope is a rapid transformation to mutual aid and socialism. Only socialism can save us now. The next 3 months will be a horror beyond imagination. Love is the answer. Love and organization. Open the prisons. Close down capitalism. 10 million U.S. citizens have applied in the past 2 weeks for unemployment compensation, breaking all historic records. People are organizing in workplaces previously thought to be immune to unions like Amazon and Walmart. Calls for a rent and mortgage holiday are resounding through the nation, and it's only a short step from there to realize that housing is a human right. The capitalist elite is shaking in its Gucci's. President Trump is so stunned by this information that he has stopped tweeting for hours. Maybe he has begun to suspect that he and his Frankenstein, Stephen Miller, will eventually have to answer to a tribunal for his genocidal slow walking of testing. Trump's faithful MAGA dogs cannot wag their tails anymore. They are too sad, and it is likely Trump will try to wag the dog in Iran and now in Venezuela. I will focus today on the Armada outside Venezuela. But first, here is news about Iran from Radio Havana, Cuba. President Hassan Rouhani says the United States lost a unique opportunity to correct some of its mistakes concerning Iran by lifting its illegal sanctions against the Iranian nation and facilitating its fight against the deadly coronavirus outbreak. Excuse me. Rouhani was quoted saying, "Unfortunately, the Americans did not learn a lesson even amid these acute and tough international circumstances." He was addressing the cabinet, and he said, "They did not realize what they had to do. This was the best historic opportunity for the Americans to retrace their wrong path by lifting the sanctions and to tell their own nation, for once at least, that we are not against the Iranian nation," end quote. The Americans, Rouhani added, have always, quote, acted against the Iranian people, and today their opposition towards the people came to be witnessed more clearly, end quote. The U.S. administration not only failed to ease the restrictive measures that brought even sanctions against the country amid the outbreak, under whatever pretext it could find, he said. The United States has imposed anti-Iran sanctions against some Iranian, Chinese, Hong Kong, and South African firms. Washington's insistence on retaining the sanctions came at a time when the pandemic has afflicted the entire international community alike and when all needed to join hands to curtail the fast-spreading disease. There's more on that. It's at Radio Havana, Cuba, and I recommend that you use a private browser to pull that up if you do. There is an armada outside Venezuela. Code Pink alerted me to it yesterday, and many other people. Here's what the New York Times had to say about it yesterday, and I'm going to add my own comments in more or less spuriously, so this is not a quote of the New York Times directly. But they write, President Donald Trump announced Wednesday that Navy ships are being moved towards Venezuela as his administration beefs up counter-narcotics operations in the Caribbean following a U.S. drug indictment against Nicolas Maduro. The announcement of the daily White House press briefing to discuss coronavirus pandemic, which has left much of the country in lockdown and which the government warns could cause 100,000 to 240,000 deaths. And as I said, that's a ridiculous total. It doesn't make sense. There's a quote from Defense Secretary Mark Esper. The Venezuelan people continue to suffer tremendously due to Maduro and his criminal control over the country, and drug traffickers are seizing on this lawlessness, end quote. Now, speaking for myself, of course, the Venezuelan people are suffering from the carefully engineered starvation siege imposed by the U.S. This includes many forms of sabotage conducted by U.S. jackals across the world. Oil exports are blocked at every turn, and the U.S. has even stolen billions of dollars worth of Venezuelan gold, which is held by the once-reliable Bank of England. New York Times writes, the deployment is one of the largest U.S. military operations in the region since the 1989 invasion of Panama to remove General Manuel Noriega from power and bring him to the U.S. to face drug charges. Now, that's a little historic revisionism on their part. The U.S. invaded Panama in order to seize the canal, which had been, through diplomacy, arranged to be shortly given to Panama to control. It is now controlled by the United States, and always will be, because of the Panama invasion. That's what it was about, and it was about projecting power in the region, and it was about terrorizing South America and Central America, and I'll explain that momentarily. But quoting the New York Times again, it involves assets like Navy warships, AWACS surveillance aircraft, and on-ground special forces seldom seen before in the region. And now, this clearly implies aircraft carriers, but due to the new Trump secrecy rules, I cannot easily find out which ones. Trump wants to make sure that there is no journalism available in a war effort to threaten an outbreak of American democracy. Nothing's worse for him than the idea of people deciding whether to go to war. Democracy must not happen, and he has special rules now. The goal is to nearly double U.S. counter-narcotics capacity in the Western Hemisphere with forces operating both in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific. Esper said the mission would be supported by 22 partner nations, they write. And they quote Trump saying, as governments and nations focus on the coronavirus, there is a growing threat that cartels, criminals, terrorists, and other malign actors will try to exploit the situation for their own gain. We must not let that happen, end quote. New York Times writes, the enhanced mission has been months in the making, but has taken on greater urgency following last week's indictment of Maduro, Venezuela's embattled socialist leader, and members of his inner circle and military. Notice that they can't say president of Venezuela, and they have to say embattled socialist leader. Quoting New York Times again, they are accused of leading a narco-terrorist conspiracy responsible for smuggling up to 250 metric tons of cocaine a year into the U.S., about half of it by sea. Of course, speaking for myself, it's the USA's reliable ally, Colombia, that is producing and smuggling the favorite drug of New York and Washington's affluent elite. Quoting Senator Marco Rubio, if I was just indicted for drug trafficking by the United States with a $15 million reward for my capture, having the U.S. Navy conducting an anti-drug operations off my coast would be something I would worry about, end quotes. They describe him as a Florida Republican who has been among those calling for a tougher stance against Maduro. Speaking for myself, Rubio has been publicly drooling at every U.S. threat against Caracas for years now, hoping to ensure his reelection as the Florida version of Attila the Hun. Quoting New York Times again, Maduro's communications minister, Jorge Rodriguez, called the deployment a desperate attempt to distract attention from the tragic humanitarian crisis in the U.S. caused by the coronavirus. And in an ironic jab, he said that for the first time in decades, the U.S. is trying to choke off a supply of cocaine, which he noted mostly comes from Colombia, a staunch U.S. ally. Quoting the Times, Maduro has blasted the Trump administration's offer of a $15 million reward for his a $15 million reward for his arrest, calling it the work of a racist cowboy aimed at getting U.S. hands on Venezuela's vast oil reserves, the world's largest. Now, speaking for myself, I invite you to think about that. Venezuela, is a surrounded and desperate country where people would be ecstatic to get a sack of flour. Imagine what your fellow citizens would say right now if China offered a gigantic sum to capture and extradite the U.S. president. These are acts of war, and they have their precedent in the December 20th, 1989 invasion of Panama. More about that in a minute. It is completely illegal under international law for the U.S. to announce an indictment against a foreign leader, not to mention insufferably arrogant and disruptive of international diplomatic relations. So this is Press Watch. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I am speaking from my side room and broadcasting from the couch. That's made possible by our terrific KBOO staff who have worked overtime and under time and beside times and have created from our live broadcast station an automated and or remote capable station. That's your contributions at work. We're going to need your contributions if you're able to do it. There are a few of you still able to do it. We need those contributions now more than ever. You can find a little button on kboo.fm. It's easy. And you can connect now with us and tag us with contribution. I encourage you to do so. And if you're fabulously wealthy, well, we're probably not talking to you. But if you've got a little money that you can share, well, KBOO needs it. I want to return to quoting New York Times about this and, of course, criticizing what they actually write. Quoting New York Times, others have faulted the U.S. plan, unveiled Tuesday by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, to create a five-member council without Maduro or Guaido to govern the country until elections can be held within a year. It is the first attempt in months by the U.S. They write, it's the first attempt to seek a negotiated solution to Venezuela's stalemate, coming on the heels of the indictments. Many say it has little hope of succeeding and likely to drive Maduro further away from the path of dialogue. Now, in that sentence, the New York Times has left off an apostrophe and a comma in a sign of the harried desperation today of journalists and editors. It's in our post-Reagan, post-education capitalist utopia. But the sentence describes a tactic from the playbook of the bloody Panama invasion, in which Noriega's rule was first undermined previous to the invasion by selecting and promoting his opponents as acceptable substitute rulers. They write, the Trump administration has long insisted that all options are on the table for removing Maduro, including military ones. Still, there's no indication then or now that any sort of U.S. invasion is being planned, in quotes. Now, it's a very questionable assertion, as I will shortly detail. 14 minutes after the top of the hour, you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Quoting the New York Times again, rather, the sending of ships fits into a longstanding call by the U.S. Southern Command for additional assets to combat growing anti-narcotics and other security threats in the hemisphere. It could also be an attempt, they write, to send a message of protection for Maduro's U.S.-backed rival, Juan Guaido. Maduro's chief prosecutor ordered Guaido to provide testimony Thursday as part of an investigation into an alleged coup attempt. Guaido, the head of Venezuela's Congress, who is recognized as his country's legitimate leader by the U.S. and almost 60 other nations, is unlikely to show up, raising the possibility he could be arrested. The U.S. has long insisted it will not tolerate any harm against Guaido. And that's what they write. And Guaido's Confederate general was just caught with an impressive stash of weaponry in the Colombian jungle. There have been many attempts to install Guaido, and it's ugly. And it's anti-democratic, and it's part of the U.S. historic action, so it isn't just Trump doing this, of course. It wasn't Trump that invaded Panama. It was Bush the Greater. But this is what the U.S. does. Quoting the New York Times again, in January, another Navy vessel, the USS Detroit, conducted a freedom of navigation operation off the coast of Venezuela in a show of pressure against Maduro. Speaking for myself, the Armada off the coast of Venezuela is the largest assembly of U.S. ships in the region since the Panama invasion. Don't be deceived by the description of the Armada as a drug interdiction force. These are invasion ships, including large numbers of Marines and several giant hovercrafts. The U.S. has about 90 of them. They are built to move large, heavy equipment and soldiers directly onto beaches. That's done so that you can avoid the ports where you're much more likely to be shot back at. The USS Carter Hall, for example, has a special flooding dock on board to launch that sort of warship. It is likely that the thousands of soldiers and sailors in the Caribbean right now are being instructed to invade as soon as some provocation is completed. More on that in a minute. And by the way, you can find my comments on this and on the pandemic on Facebook as Teresa Mitchell. Find my tweets as KBOO Press Watch. I want to quote a Counterpunch article from 2014 by Matt Pepin. I'm talking about the invasion of Panama because there are so many similarities, very deliberate similarities here, including the coordination of Elliot Abrams. Before dawn on December 20th, 1989, U.S. forces descended on Panama City and unleashed one of the most violent, destructive terror attacks of the century. U.S. soldiers killed more people than were killed on 9/11. They systematically burned apartment buildings and shot people indiscriminately in the streets. Dead bodies were piled on top of each other. Many were burned before identification. The aggression was condemned internationally, but the message was clear. The United States military was free to do whatever it wanted, whenever it wanted, and they would not be bound by ethics or laws. And speaking for myself, this was about terrorizing the region, and it worked. People in Caracas right now know what the U.S. did. They attacked civilians intentionally. They burned and bombed and shot. And they piled people into mass graves. There's a movie about that called The Panama Deception. You can watch it right now for free on YouTube. But returning to Matt Pepe's article, the invasion and ensuing occupation produced gruesome scenes. William Bloom writes, quote, people burning to death in the incinerated dwellings, leaping from windows, running in panic through the streets, cut down in crossfire, crushed by tanks, human fragments everywhere, end quote. U.S. government officials needed to put the world on notice. At the same time, President George H.W. Bush needed to shed his image as a wimp. So they did what any schoolyard bully would, pick out the smallest, weakest target you can find and beat him to a bloody pulp. The victim is irrelevant. The point is the impression that you make on the people around you. Panama was an easy target because the U.S. had already had a large military force in the 18 bases around the country. Until 1979, the occupied Panama Canal Zone had been sovereign territory of the United States. The Panama Canal was scheduled to be turned over to Panama partially in 1990 and fully in 2000. The U.S. military would be able to crush a hapless opponent and ensure control over a vital strategic asset. Washington began disseminating propaganda about human rights abuses and drug trafficking by President Manuel Noriega. Now, speaking for myself, this is where you see the parallels. This is the same playbook. Returning to the article, most of the allegations were true, and they had all been willingly supported by the U.S. government while Noriega was a CIA asset, receiving more than $100,000 per year. But when Noriega was less than enthusiastic about helping the CIA and their terrorist Contra army wage war against the civilian population in Nicaragua, things changed. Noam Chomsky wrote, quote, it's all quite predictable, as study after study shows. A brutal tyrant crosses the line from admirable friend to villain and scum when he commits the crime of independence, end quote. Skipping ahead in the article, the documentary, The Panama Deception, demonstrates how the media uncritically adopted U.S. government propaganda, echoing accusations of human rights violations and drug trafficking while ignoring international law and the prohibition against the use of force in the U.N. Charter. The Academy Award-winning film exposed what the corporate media refused to, the lies and distortions, the hypocrisy, the dead bodies, the survivors' harrowing tales, and the complete impunity of the U.S. military to suppress the truth. The propaganda started with a concoction of a pretext for the invasion. The U.S. military had been sending aggressive patrols into Panama City streets trying to elicit a response. Skipping ahead, Elizabeth Montgomery, narrating the Panama deception, says, quote, it soon became clear that the objectives were not limited only to military targets. According to witnesses, many of the surrounding residential neighborhoods were deliberately attacked and destroyed, end quote. Witnesses recounted U.S. soldiers setting residential buildings on fire. Video footage shows the charred remains of rows of housing complexes in El Chorrillo, one of the city's poorest neighborhoods. And there's more on that. You can find the article in counterpunch.org. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. No one knows the exact number of people who were killed during the invasion of Panama. The best estimates are at least 2,000 to 3,000 Panamanians, but that might be a conservative figure. Now, I said that the Trump administration has deliberately made it difficult for Americans to find out, so I have had to turn to the international press. I turned to elpais.com in Chile for this. I'm going to read now a rather clumsy translation using the translation machine from Google. This is what we have to do now to find out what's going on. They write, for the first time after a preliminary investigation has been opened, the Venezuelan prosecutor's office, controlled by the government of Nicolas Maduro, has issued an arrest warrant against opposition leader Juan Guaido, president of the National Assembly and recognized as interim president by more than 50 foreign countries. This Tuesday, the prosecutor, Tariq William Saab, reported that he has issued a summons to appear today at 9 in the morning, 3 hours ago now, because it's Eastern time in Caracas, 9 in the morning at the public ministry. This action takes place in the framework of a case opened against him for his participation in, quote, a new attempt to eliminate the Venezuelan authorities through a coup and assassination, end quote. The case with which he is now related is the seizure of weapons of war that occurred 2 weeks ago in Barranquilla, Colombia, which afterwards the ex-Venezuelan military man Quivera Alcalá Cordones attributed as part of a plan that he would be coordinating under instructions from Guaido himself to venture into the country and overthrow Maduro. Such allegations have been denied by the head of parliament, Alcalá Cordones, who was charged last week by the United States Department of Justice with having ties to drug trafficking, got onto a plane Friday sent by Washington to turn himself in to U.S. authorities. And speaking for myself, do you think that's a little weird? I do. What are they up to? I'm guessing that Cordones has cut a deal. I mean, why would he get on the plane after that? So, I mean, I can see why you would run away from Caracas. Returning to the Chilean press, El País translated, again, clumsily, I'm sorry. The prosecutor attacked in his statement, he attacks the government of Colombia. The quote is, the investigation began after the seizure of 26 AR-15 assault rifles, 30 laser sights, 37 night sights, 8 silencers, bulletproof vests, helmets, and other items of military use that were to be used against the Venezuelan authorities by groups of soldiers trained in Colombia with the consent of President Iván Duque. He added that the actions of that country were embarrassing, and is quoted saying, this fact shows that Colombia is a colony annexed to the United States, end quote. Them's fighting words in South America, of course. Returning to the El País article, Guaido has 2 other inquiries opened by the prosecutor appointed by the parallel parliament, faithful to Maduro, the National Constituent Assembly. Now, when they write that, they're kissing up to the U.S. because the parliament faithful to Maduro is the elected and legitimate parliament. And the parallel parliament, that phrase should be applied to Guaido's little puppet assembly. Returning to the article, for one of them, they have a ban on leaving the country, which he has evaded twice. And both he has returned through the international airport without being detained, which, speaking for myself, was a smart move by the Venezuelans, since as soon as they detain him, the U.S. will have its excuse to invade. Returning to the article, his parliamentary immunity was revoked last year, as well as that of another 20 deputies in irregular procedures and in violation of the Constitution. Prosecutor Saab said that the summons was received Monday night by Guaido's chief of security, who has so far not publicly reacted to the request for an appearance. So all that's cooking. Now, in another article in El País, the political crisis that Venezuela is going through has been aggravated in the midst of the coronavirus emergency, which is leading the Nicolas Maduro government to face the pandemic with public health devastated by mismanagement. Internal tension and pressure from the U.S. has deepened the fight between the Chavista president and his rival, Juan Guaido, who has spent a year trying to force a transition into the country, and this Thursday is called to appear in court in charges of the coup attempt. The shock that COVID-19 is causing on the Venezuelan political panel has deepened the already enormous fracture that separates the executive from the opposition. As calls for unity to cope with the pandemic multiply, and after weeks of discreet attempts to try to engage in dialogue, the stage took a turn last week. The first step was taken by the U.S. administration, Guaido's main supporter, as the supposedly legitimate president of Venezuela. The U.S. Justice Department formalized an international drug trafficking accusation against Maduro and the regime's leadership, and speaking for myself, this is the parallel with Panama again, and put a price on his head, $15 million, for information leading to his arrest. That premise thwarted the possibilities of a negotiation that recognizes the president and his environment as valid interlocutors and exposed the international isolation of Caracas, especially before neighboring Colombia. Speaking for myself again, they are beset in every way, including having their funds stolen. So the situation is truly desperate. On previous broadcasts about Venezuela, I've mentioned that there are armaments, substantial arms, and more or less competent army there, but they have been so poor, so desperate for so long, it's questionable whether any of their better equipment is still functioning or not sold in, for whatever people can get. That's what happens when you have a gigantic and wealthy imperium starve and lay siege to a small and poor country. They would be able to fight back if they could sell their oil, I suppose, but they haven't been able to for years thanks to the U.S. Skipping ahead in El País's article, Maduro's response was in some way a challenge to the government of Donald Trump, who on Wednesday announced the deployment in the Caribbean near the Venezuelan coast of many warships, planes, and special forces to intensify the fight allegedly against drug trafficking. Maduro called the Council of State the highest consultation body to deliberate on a national plan to confront the coronavirus epidemic, pandemic, and announced that he will begin talks with the dissident opposition Luis Parra, whom the ruling party recognizes as the president of the National Assembly. And speaking for myself, that is an indication of that is very different and terrific indication of desperation on his part. He knows that the soldiers are moving in. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. We are broadcasting to you via 90.7 FM on our great big red and white transmitter in the West Hills, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.